This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, one in the books, two to go, second hour of the show. It is The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Barry, Nick, Joel, F, yeah. Friday, as we've already had a packed first hour of the show, and you can expect Sarah Barshot, the ESPN Texans beat reporter, to join us at 3:30, as she will make weekly appearances here on the show and give us insight on Texans and Cowboys and week three of the preseason and cheering in the stadium. And
I need to lock her in. I really haven't locked her in for 3:30 every Friday. We've discussed it, but I need to be like, hey, going forward, can we just count on you 3:30 every Friday? So sure. We'll need to make that happen.
Our comedian.
I do want to give her credit. Sorry, but I do want to give her credit because I actually, when I told you I was listening to the competitors, people were saying how they didn't expect Deshaun Watson to play last week. You heard it here first, because when asked, Sarah was the one that said, yeah, he'll probably play a series, and that's exactly what happened. She's tied in too, so.
Yeah?
She's got her ear to the streets, as they say.
No doubt about it. Our comedian of the week, Theo Taylor. Barry told you about the fact he's been wanting to have him on for quite a while. Got him on now. Got the clips ready to go. Got one at 2:15, one at 3:15. If you missed the one at 1:15, go back and check out the podcast or ESPN975.com. Click on the show tab. Catch up on what you missed.
Yep.
So have you gotten any feedback on your
preseason? I haven't made that
cheering
way up through the text line yet, but I did have something, and I guess it's hour number two, so we can address it. But somebody had a question about Gerrit Cole.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked, this might be dumb, but I'm enjoying watching Cole pitch, but I just have it in the back of my mind that are we sure Cole is leaving the Astros after this year? To me, he's a younger Verlander.
Well, how much money are you willing to pay him?
That's the thing, is you know he's going to go out and test the market. There's just no doubt about that. And if he wins the Cy Young, I'm going to hate that because Joel picked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked Verlander. Two, I'm going to hate it because he's going to get paid a grip if he wins the Cy Young. Even finishing second. I mean, there's no doubt just the year he's having, unless there's an absolute tank job or horrific injury between now and the end of the season, that dude's getting paid. He's going to get a lucrative starting pitcher contract.
Mm-hmm. I think that he's surpassed the young arms of the game that everybody talked about. He came out of nowhere, and obviously a lot of it thanks to the success he's had in Houston as well, but he's surpassed DeGrom and Syndergaard and all these young, you know, big-time arms that were coming up that everybody's like, well, that's what you build the team around. So I think whether he wins it or not, I think he's proven himself enough that people are going to go, hey, if our pitching sucks or we need an upgrade, that's who we're going to go get. So you're right. There's going to be a bidding war. And unless he wants to give the Astros one hell of a hometown discount, I think the Astros would obviously absolutely love to go get him and bring him back or sign him. But there's a reason why they made the trade for Greinke, because they know what we know, what we keep telling you, which is he's going to get paid a lot of money and the offers are probably going to be bigger than what the Astros can afford.
It's hard to carry three aces because you have to pay for three aces. And right now, Gerrit Cole isn't getting paid ace money, but he will at the end of this year, going into next year. So what you've done is you've gone out and you've, like you said, you got Greinke to replace that spot in the rotation, and now you have to do what the Astros have been doing. You got to go find the next Charlie Morton / Gerrit Cole.
Or
and you plug them in,
the
and maybe that's
Dallas
Miley.
Keuchel, which was Wade Miley.
And maybe, I was going to say, maybe that's Miley that you can work with. But, you know, they like guys that top out in the high 90s and throw a crisp, sharp breaking ball. So I have no doubt that this team or this off front office can find somebody else. It's make the money work. And they've proven time and time again there's no reason to doubt that they can't.
Well, and let's also keep in mind, as long as everything goes as planned, Lance McCullers should be bouncing back from Tommy John surgery. Hopefully he'll be okay, because there's a guy that could absolutely be slotted into a spot in the rotation. Yeah, and he can give you a lot right there with a proven arm and proven experience like he has. So you've got a lot to consider. And again, you look at the camaraderie in that clubhouse and in that dugout on a night-in, night-out basis. And I do think that there will be some influence in the fact that he likes it here. And he likes being around the guys he's around, and Brent, not just Brent Strom and those guys. He loves talking on a nightly basis. With you see him, it's him, Verlander, and AJ. And then, you know, you see Greinke talking to those guys and other guys. And you see that there's that certain dynamic in that clubhouse. And I think he likes everything about Houston. But it's hard not to like it when they throw $35 million plus or $30 million plus at you and say, hey, you want 5 years at 30 a year to go join the Angels or the Yankees or someone like that? He'd be like, yeah, it's pretty tough to walk away from that.
I mean, money.
So you don't think he's going to get 30 a year, do you?
I do. I think he'll end up being one of the top five or six.
Because I said it earlier, and I thought you thought he was going to be 20, around 25 or so, I thought you had said. But I was like, look, bottom line is, whether he wins a Cy Young or not, I just see it being 30-plus a year because the demand is going to be so high. There's not going to be that many starting pitchers that offer what he offers on the market. And you've got big-name cities with big dollars that need some. The Angels, and he's a California kid. The Angels need pitching desperately. They've got money, and they need to make a splash. Well, there's your guy.
So right now, here's your top five contracts, and you tell me if you would pay him amongst these folks.
Okay.
And this is by total dollars, not average. Okay. David Price got a $217 million contract.
He got overpaid.
It was a seven-year contract.
He doesn't come close to earning that.
Well, maybe it wasn't a seven-year contract. Max Scherzer got a $210 million contract. That was 30 years. So, yeah, so David Price was 31 a year. Max Scherzer was 30 a year. Greinke got $206 million at 34 a year. And Strasburg got $175 million at 25 a year. That's four. And then John Lester got $155 at 25 a year.
He's worth more than every one of those guys.
I think he's worth more than everyone not named Max Scherzer, probably. But Max Scherzer's getting 30 a year.
Can you imagine when you were naming those names? Think about that Detroit pitching staff a few years ago that had Verlander, Scherzer, Price.
Jeez.
And they had, was it, who else was on that? Was it Porcello?
Yeah, I think Porcello was on there.
My goodness. Because Verlander said that was the year he didn't have, he wasn't actually healthy
yeah.
like he was. But he was talking about it because they were comparing staffs and stuff. God, that rotation
it's ridiculous.
Was just. It was crazy.
But Max Scherzer's making 30 a year. David Price is making 31. Greinke's making 34. I think he is certainly in that discussion with those guys somewhere yeah. amongst those. And
obviously Verlander's, what, 33?
Verlander makes 33 a year. His contract was 2 years, $66
million.
So, you wonder, Cole's going to want that. A lot of these contracts at the top of this list are 6 and 7 years. So if he wants 6 to 7 years and 30 mil, I mean, it depends. You know, you went out and got Greinke, and that's your backup plan. Maybe you can get him on like you did with Verlander on a 2 year deal. Probably not. So it's going to cost you somewhere between 180 and 210 million.
And I think the one thing that his agent's going to tell him and the people surrounding him too is don't give the hometown discount on a short term deal, because look at David Price. If he doesn't sign that monster deal before he goes through all the different arm issues and other issues he's had since then, when he's really not lived up to all the hype, the billing, and the money, you're never going to get a second chance to get an offer like that in a lot of cases, and your health does start to wear on you with all the wear and tear. And obviously, you know, as you said, the Astros love it, but he's a power pitcher, and he puts a lot of wear and tear on that wing. And at some point, it may catch up with him, too. So, yeah, he's never going to probably get a chance to cash in bigger than he is this year.
His spot track value is $28.6 million. He's 28 years old.
He's definitely going over 30. Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's what I was saying when you were saying you thought 25. What I'll do is I'll look at something like that.
I thought you had said that previous, because I had said from the get-go he's going to make 30-plus.
It's always been at 28.6, which is roughly 29, and I'm usually – it kind of, if I'll go and evaluate the way that they've ranked this and come up with that number, and if I agree with it, then I'd be like, yeah, I mean, 30, 29, what's the difference, right?
I think he's going
but he's over 30. Compared with guys like Chris Sale, David Price, Jacob deGrom, and Patrick Corbin as far as output statistically and where he ranks salary-wise. So,
and again, to my point, too, about the wear and tear, Sale avoided Tommy John, but he's had a lot of issues with his arm again this year.
So he'll be, if he gets a six-year deal, he'll be 36 when that deal is up.
Yeah.
I mean, Verlander's that old.
I know.
And still going.
You know, I was thinking if there was a way to where you structure it where the dollars are right, but at least it syncs up with you don't have to really start paying him until after the 2 years left with Verlander so that he becomes your long-term Verlander. But it's still the amount of money. Because you still have to play Correa and figure out what you're going to do there and Springer.
So what you're
all
saying is you just backload a seven-year deal. So you go, we'll go 30 to 10. but it won't be 30 a year for the first two years. We'll do 20 a year, and then we'll spread the extra 20
that you didn't pay. Because by then the market value may make it look like a better deal.
Yeah, then we'll do the extra 20 over the next 4 or 5 years, so you'll make 34 at the back end of the contract. Yep. At the end of the it's all guaranteed, and at the end of the day, he still makes his 210 over the next 6 years or 7 years. So what's the difference?
Yeah, that's the way I was thinking about it.
Simply, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
And simply because of the fact then you're not suffering by the last 2 years of Verlander, and then when he's on the downside and he's not worth that anymore, then you have Cole to carry you the rest of the way. So
you talk about value. He's making $13 million this year.
Who?
Gerrit Cole.
Oh my God.
Value.
And the Cy Young.
Yeah.
Did you say yeah? Okay. I just want to make, because I predicted that you.
I said yeah on the
I know. I thought you were just playing around. All right, so we'll get that on the flip side. Before we get to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Twin Peaks. Cody was actually brought to you by Twin Peaks as well, but we've been telling you about this for a long time now. If you're looking for a great place to watch sports, but better yet, if you're looking for a great place to hold your fantasy football draft, just hit up Twin Peaks. There's 5 locations in the Houston area to serve you better, and it's just the ideal place to have your draft. We all had a draft there this week. It's fantastic because, of course, you've got the beautiful Twin Peaks girls, but more important than that, too, you're going to get made-from-scratch food, appetizers, and entrees. You're going to get 29-degree draft beer, and that's guaranteed by the thermostat that's above the bar that's going to tell you that they keep it ice cold. And they've got screens all over. The other night we were watching everything from Little League Baseball to the Astros to preseason football, and it was all over the place because they make sure they have every sports package and all the screens capable of handling all your viewing needs. It's the best place to do any kind of sports watching, whether it be for your fantasy football draft or just to hang out. And again, let me remember and remind you that those Twin Peaks girls are there. I believe it's back to school week. So until the 25th, they're going to be dressed up like it's back to school time, and that's never a bad thing either. So check them out at one of the 5 Houston area locations. It's eats, it's drinks, it's scenic views. It's Twin Peaks.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
You know, I think if you put up with me for 5 years, you at least deserve a ring, you know? But I'm not a romantic guy. You know, like, every woman wants that crazy romantic story. You hear, oh my God, it was such a beautiful night, and the stars were shining up above, and the waiter came around with breadsticks, and he knew I wanted breadsticks, so I take the breadstick, and I open the breadstick. There was a ring baked inside the breadstick! And I was like, oh my God, how do you know I was going to pick that breadstick? He's like, I picked a ring inside of every breadstick.
There you go, Comedian of the Week, Theo Taylor. Barry told you about him. Still have another clip coming up at 3:15. Funny dude. So check him out. How does he not have a Twitter account? We just don't know.
I don't know what it is. I reached out to him and asked, hey, bro, what's your Twitter? I'll promote it. And then he never did it. And like I said, he doesn't care about this stuff. He just does comedy, and he's funny. And, he, you know, he works the road, and that's what he does. But he's a really funny dude. If you see Theo is going to be on a show at the Improv, you should definitely go.
There you have that. And with that, we also like to give you, the suspects, opportunities to win some things because we appreciate you listening to the show. So with that being said, the annual Texas Southern University Prairie View A&M Labor Day Classic game is going to be held Saturday, August the 31st at BBVA Compass Stadium. I think they changed the name of it. But watch the TSU Tigers as they take on the defending champs, the Prairie View A&M Panthers. Caller 12 right now wins a pair of tickets to that game. Tickets start at just $20. So if you don't win them, you can buy them and still see good quality football. They're available online at bbvastadium.com or at the stadium box office. But caller 12 right now, 713-780-3776. You get 2 tickets to the game. Good luck.
2 tickets to paradise.
Any money.
Very good.
Thank you very much. All right, with that being said, before we got into all that stuff, we were getting into the Gerrit Cole contract situation, and we're answering a few questions. Mark, patiently waiting, wanted to get in on the discussion. Mark, what's going on?
What's up, Joel? What's up, Barry?
What's up?
Hey, so I think you hit the nail on the head with the stretching the contract where the 2 years that you have, Greinke and Verlander, you know, you give Gerrit Cole a little lower than what it is, and then you just backload it at the end. Or you can even give him a early release where he can renegotiate his contract again after maybe 2 or 3 years. And, I mean, you got a bunch of contracts coming off the books as well, Redick and Gurriel and all those guys. And I know you got to pay Correa and also, but, I mean, the way Correa's looking right now, I mean, who knows? Maybe you might not even have to deal with that.
There you go.
We appreciate the call, Mark. You're still going to have to pay Correa. Unless the plan is to move Alex Bregman back to shortstop and you have a third baseman of the future that can replace the production and potential production that Correa can provide you year in and year out when he's on the field. But I don't think that this is an organization that looks like, well, you know, Correa's been banged up a little bit here and there. We're just going to move on. I don't see that as the case. Correa can be a once-in-a-generation talent at that position.
But again, and we were talking about this, and we talk about this with, you were talking about in other sports too, the Cam Newton, and when you look at it, but there's reality and there's perception. The perception is Cam Newton's been dinged up a lot. The reality is Carlos Correa has missed time. He is injury prone at this point by the fact that almost every year in the last 3 to 4 years, he's missed 50 plus games due to injury. Look at this season, and we know that it started out with the rib. Now it's back to another back issue. And yet you can say, well, those were little things, but those little things turn into big things when you miss 50 plus games. If he doesn't play until September, he's going to be over the 60 to 65 games missed this season alone. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something that you want to throw. I mean, that you'll have second thoughts and you'll think about longer and harder because of the fact that, do you really want to give, because the Bryce Harper and Manny Machado type money too, when you know you're not going to get full seasons out of him, or at least the track record shows that he's injury prone.
And you're going to bail on a rookie of the year that his career 162 game average is 30-110 home runs and RBIs? No way. No way you give up on that. You use the injuries.
I'm not saying give up on it, but
you use the injuries as a point of negotiation. But you use those injuries as a point of negotiation to say, look, man, you know, maybe we do a shorter term deal. He's got 2 more years of arbitration, by the way. Maybe 3, if I'm not mistaken. He's got.
He's coming up. Springer's coming up.
No, he's arbitration 2 in 2020. That means you still got to go through 4 arbitrations.
4?
So, yeah, it'll be 2022. That'll be his 4th year of arbitration. Now, unless they, you know, do something where
like
they just
the
say,
Bregman thing.
Well, yeah, so forget arbitration. We'll just pay you now. But you still have at least 2 more years of arbitration, if not 3 with Carlos Correa. Why? He got $1 million last year, or $5 million.
But I'm not saying do it now. And I'm not saying that they're going to lose him. I just said that, you know, a lot of people, first of all, there's a lot of people ready to crap on him and get rid of him now. But there's also a lot of people that are in this school of thought of, you can't afford him. You don't know that. Because of the injuries, like you said, a good negotiating point might be, hey, man, look.
We'll do a short-term 2-year, 25 a year.
And see how it goes. Yeah. And if you can stay healthy and prove yourself.
But that's 2 to 3 years down the road from now. So, I mean, Zach Greinke's off the books by then. Verlander's off the books by then. You know, who knows what McCullers is going to be. So that's a ways away. And I know people keep bringing up Carlos Correa and when we talk money.
A lot.
That's not necessarily something that they're looking at right now.
And it's amazing because of, like you said, yeah, he's been dinged up. But he's also been productive when he's been on the field. But it's amazing how quickly people have turned on him. They blame the fiance for everything, and that's an issue, and the masseuse thing. And then, you know, because he's injured again, they say trade him now. Before the deadline, they were like, trade him for someone. It's like, still.
Wasn't he the fastest shortstop to 100 home runs Astros history?
In Astros history, yes, and one of the top 3 in baseball history.
And that's missing 50. That's playing in 99, 153, 109, and 110, and 72 games this year. So he's never put in a full season, like you said. 2017, he played in 109. 2018, he played in 110. He maybe not hitting that this year. So, but he's still putting up prolific numbers. And again, 30-110 is what he averages over 162 games. That's hard to find that kind of production and still hit
at a shortstop too.
Yeah, at a shortstop, still hit 277, so 275 at least. And with an OPS of over 840.
And look, when we talk about the core four, the other guy you really got to be concerned with, and it's going to be more pressing and sooner, is Springer. Because you're talking about a guy there that not only, numbers-wise, is going to fit the bill for a guy that deserves the bigger payday, but the fact that the Astros held him back, so that they could keep him under team control, so that they could save money, was an issue. And they tried, bless the Astros' new staff for trying to do something proactive to try and make him a little happier so that he doesn't want to just get mad and leave. But he's going to be looking for a big payday because he's older than all these other guys in the core four. And he's going to try and, this could be his one shot, like we were talking about with Cole, to get a big, big payday. And he's coming up sooner, too.
Well, yeah, so this year he got 12 mil. And then in 2020, it's his arbitration four. So it's his fourth year of arbitration. Then he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So what you might see is if the Astros are committed to George Springer as their center fielder for the next 5 years or 6 years, is they say, you know what? We'll skip arbitration. We're just going to – we know we were getting a discount. So we probably would have – you would have got 12 to 15 this year or next year in arbitration. Let's just start at 20, and then we'll go 25 after that. And
if they do a Bregman-type deal and they can get that done, that'd be fantastic because they did this. This is the second year, the two-year $24 million deal that they didn't have to do, which was the kind of – What do you want to call it? The olive branch to try and say, hey, you're supposed to only be making like 6.75 for a couple more years or in that range and or whatever he was making before the deal. And they said, we'll give you 2 and 24.
2017, he got $4 million, and that was his first year of arbitration. So he went from making $500,000 in 2016. He went to arbitration, and he ended up getting 3.9, almost 4. Had that, obviously, World Series year, productive, World Series MVP. It jumped from 4 to 12. And they kept it at 12 through 2019 as well. So, you could probably expect George Springer to make somewhere between 15, realistically 12 to 18. But it wouldn't surprise me if he got as high as 20. If they're really committed to him,
he's got to be in that Bregman range. I think his agent would push for that.
Possibly, I'd love to see their numbers, side by side. But there's a lot to what Jordan. We said when he was out, boy, he really makes this offense go.
And the intangibles too, the way he in that clubhouse and on that bench too. They say he's the energy and he's the personality. So it'll be interesting to see how they juggle all these numbers and who they can keep around. But of course, it'd be nice to keep the entire nucleus together. It's just going to be a hell of a challenge for Jeff Luhnow, Jim Crane, and the staff. All right. With that being said, you're shaking your head.
I'm looking at his numbers. That dude's going to get paid.
Yep, I told you.
33-90 is his 162 average. That's from the leadoff spot.
Yeah. And he set the Astros record for leadoff home runs in a year, surpassing Craig Biggio.
Three-time All-Star in the last 3 years.
World Series MVP.
Yeah.
Defensively.
295 this year, 949 OPS. Better pay him.
You better hope you can get him wrapped up for that Bregman-type money. Otherwise, he's going to go somewhere else and get much more. He's an East Coast kid. Whether it's Red Sox or Yankees, they're going to be hot on his trail. All right, second half of the show is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Still 90 minutes on the clock and lots to get to. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go! Second half of the show. 90 in the books and 90 still to go on The Usual Suspects. It is ESPN 97.5. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel as we're rolling through. Again, mark your calendars in terms of 3:30 today. Sarah Barshop, Texans beat writer, is going to join us. We got some things to go over with Sarah.
We do indeed. Hey, I got some text to catch up with now in regards to the question we asked earlier about, is it ridiculous for fans to cheer preseason games or get excited about preseason games? I said I think it is. Mm-hmm. You guys said I was an idiot. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was a few tweets that came in that were mixed. So to the text line we go, Steelers fan Juan said, preseason football isn't for cheering, it's for studying. All you should do is hope your team starters look good and no one gets injured. Who cares if they win? That's NASCAR Johnny. Texans fans have always trash talked to me. That was the other part of the question, is talking trash to, say, Texans and Cowboys fans over a preseason game. Somebody said Texans fans have always trash talked me after a preseason game win against the Cowboys. And I'm like, do you even watch football? The only reason there's ever been a preseason, there's even a preseason, is they don't want to lose money. Everything that they could figure out, they could do at a practice. That's a good point, is really you could figure out who's going to be on your 53-man roster just through joint practices and whatnot. And then I went to the Texans versus Cowboys game, also recorded chicks fighting. Yeah, well, I don't know why you fight in a preseason game. Then there was a really long one that just said, I don't really celebrate preseason games. And all my friends trash talk me because they're Cowboys fans. So I think the Twitter had it one way. The Twitter agreed with you guys more specifically about, look, it's my team. I'm going to cheer for them. It doesn't matter. And then I think the text line is saying, I think there was one or two that agreed with y'all, but they were saying that they don't really cheer. I think it's split. All I'm saying is it just seems like it's kind of silly to get that pumped up about a preseason game. That's it. Now, somebody did have a good point on the text line where they said, could you imagine if nobody cheered at all? It would be weird in the stadium.
Yeah, well,
that's what I'm saying. Just don't go, and then we don't have to watch these preseason football games anymore. Well, if people stop paying and going, guess what? They don't have the games anymore.
They're not going
to
stop paying because it's built into your season ticket package. So every season ticket holder has to pay for preseason too. So the Texans really don't care whether you cheer or not. As long as they get their money, and they're getting their money because we know there's a waiting list for every one of those season tickets, and everyone has to pay for preseason.
Mm.
And that is a joke.
Mm.
Because really, if you're going to pay full price, regular season prices for the preseason, then show me regular season type football, and you're not going to get that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I forgot, or I didn't realize that. I thought preseason you didn't have to pay for.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
That is built in, brother.
NFL is such a racket.
And if you're an owner, you can see why when the fans get their feelings hurt when they find out winning isn't the most important thing. When they're rolling in that dough as many times as they are, hey, winning's just icing on the cake.
At some point, and I'm speaking in generalities, and I'm probably going to catch a lot of heat for this, but whatever, I don't care. At some point, people in this town have to stop paying for tickets to see the Texans. This is the only way that this team is going to actually get a message that they got to do things differently. Until then, you're going to have Bill O'Brien being a dick to people in the media and doing what he wants to do and being slightly above average. Bill O average. That's his motto. 9-7. That's it. And until the fans, you know, stop paying for season tickets and stop showing up, nothing is going to change.
And I took it a step further. I did a video for this on SportsMap a few weeks ago and said the same thing. You just have to hold that organization accountable in every aspect, not just what you're paying for the preseason games or Bill O'Brien, but everything. 9-7 shouldn't be good enough. If this is a football town and a football state and everybody is so passionate about football, then the passion shouldn't end just because you won more than you lost. Or you won a division title and you qualified for the postseason. Or, hey, you gave it the old college try against the Patriots, but they own you and they keep beating you every time they play you by a large margin. That should really piss you off to the point of saying, hey, look, it's not good enough. I mean, stronger things have happened to lesser qualified individuals in sports. You can win division titles, but if the goals are bigger and loftier and you're not achieving them, then changes are made because there's someone else out there that possibly could get you over that whatever rut it is and get you to a different level.
I think, too, getting excited about preseason, like if I'm the Giants, Daniel Jones has looked really good in his outings, right? I mean, he's given those. So to me, that's something that you watch and you get excited about. That would be cool. Like, okay. You know, like Deshaun.
Especially since most of the city crapped on him from the time he was taken at number 6.
And Baker. Which, by the way, did you see where Baker Mayfield said he reached out to Daniel Jones specifically and talked to him and cleared the air and said, no, I wasn't rooting against you or none of that. They took it out of context. But I could see that. I could see getting excited, especially on a team that's bad. You get like a Baker Mayfield in and it's preseason and he's doing some good things. Like Deshaun, when he first got here, you're watching him going, man, that's fine. But if I'm watching the Patriots or I'm watching the Packers, I'm not getting excited about that. We know what that is. We know what they are.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
I think that, like I said, I think it's different if you're in the stadium. If you're in the stadium as a fan, you owe it to your team.
I don't owe them nothing. They
back
owe me.
Them.
They
and I get that. But I'm just saying, if you want to be, you know, in terms of loyalty as a fan, you know, if you're in the building and you want them to feel like your hometown's behind you. But I get, because like if I'm watching on TV, believe me, there's no cheering. But obviously, there's a certain passion that runs through your veins in the regular season when you, regardless of where you are, if you're in your car listening or you're watching on TV or in the stadium or otherwise, because it means something. And those wins are huge. And obviously, in every one of them means a lot. So every play is important. And I get that too. But I just think that it would be a really weird situation. And I think they'd get called out on it if they didn't cheer in the preseason in the building.
You excited about college football returning?
Yeah, I've just look. There's more to talk about, and there, and at least the, when we talked about it a couple days ago, in terms of there's not a lot of cupcake matchups. At least early on, we'll get some good matchups. I mean, Miami and Florida this weekend is a really good start to the season.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what this Florida Gators team is. You know, they ended last year, what's 82? Is they scored 82 points over their last two games, beat Michigan and Florida State, gave up 19 or 29. I mean, over those two games as well,
right?
Yeah, they're eighth.
Yeah.
Yeah, beat Michigan 41-15. That's big. Miami lost to Wisconsin at the end of their season. Yeah, didn't have a great year.
Again,
Manny Diaz.
Adrian.
See, you're right. Manny Diaz, you know, was the D coordinator for Miami. We'll see what he does. Here's something that concerned me about this game, though, is his quote was, "This is game one. All right, this is an in-state rival. This is the rekindling of a rival that existed for a really long time and then went away for a while. This would be the equivalent
A&M Texas.
Of A&M and Texas getting back together, right? And it would be the equivalent of, let's assume that A&M was a team that was scuffling a little bit and Texas was a top eight team. I wouldn't want Jimbo Fisher to say the following like Manny Diaz did about his Hurricanes going into this game. He said, well, I guess we're going to see how we face adversity. You haven't even played yet. Why are you already saying there's adversity? You might go out and no, they're not going to. You could go out and just stomp a mud hole in the Florida Gators. You don't know. You're already, I feel like, making the assumption that this isn't a good football team. And maybe he's trying to be honest without coming out and saying we're not a good football team yet. That they got a hell of a defense. I think defensively they're fine.
He recruited enough to have a good quarterback battle between two highly rated high school quarterbacks.
Yeah.
One was a transfer that was, a 4 or 5 star, and he didn't get picked as the starter. And I think he's going about it the right way. He's trying to get him back to the Miami way. I don't know if you saw this or not, but the other day at practice, he brought Jimmy Johnson in to address the team. And Jimmy Johnson talked about getting him back to the old, the U way. And knowing about the support system and the fan base and what it means when you play good football. And he said, basically, look, the way this coaching staff has coached you, the fact that they're doing 16 110s in a week to get in the heat, to get them ready. And I believe that's 110-yard sprints. Mm. And the fact that he said, look, your coaching staff has you prepared. And you have the endurance. You have the coaching staff. You have the plans and the plays. And you just got to go out and do it. He goes, now just play smart. And that's the one thing that was always a knock on the U in the past. They let emotions get into it.
Yeah.
But I think tapping into that old Kane mentality is good.
Let me tell you why bringing in Jimmy Johnson doesn't matter. Florida countered with Tim Tebow. You're not beating Jesus. You're not beating football Jesus. There's no way you can bring in all the Jimmy Johnsons you want. Dan Mullins went out and brought in football Jesus. That's game, set, match. Florida wins this by 10. Perry.
No, we're doing picks already.
I mean, I'm just saying. You got college football Jesus.
Oh, man. But you also got Jimmy's hair. That stands alone on its own.
That would be great if he had a U painted on it. You know, the Miami U.
Well, he'd never do that because you can't mess.
No, you can't touch that hair.
That was the big thing when the Cowboys finally won it. They finally let someone mess up his hair.
If I put you on the spot right now, does Florida finish the season as a top 10 team?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Even after that run late this season.
I don't trust that quarterback, and I just I don't
That's
think
a good ass
there
defense
yet.
Too, though. Yeah. You talk about Miami's defense.
I know their defense is good, but you know
Florida's
what? You still
defense
gotta score
is
points.
Stout.
You're gonna play schools.
They put up 80. They put up 41 against Michigan last year.
Michigan won all that.
Oh, now then, okay. I'm gonna hold you to that when we start talking conferences.
Michigan last year was a different team. They were overrated.
Okay.
Look at where they were in the middle of the season, God, where they finished.
I wish I had a better memory because I never remember him dogging Michigan last year.
I wish I did, too, for some of the things he said.
He loved Michigan and Big Ten football last year.
He had Garrett Cole at 25 a year.
Shut up.
Just letting you know. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. Hour number 2, 3-hour show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. I see you there. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through hour number 2, 3-hour show. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on an F-Yeah Friday. Lots of good stuff today. There's a story I do want to get to off of an Astros blog, but it's a story that we kind of touched on a while back. So I want to get to that at some point. We don't have to get to it right now. We're talking baseball a lot this hour. P. Randizzle had a good point, by the way, on your
yes.
comments.
I'll be the judge of that.
Team and everything
like I'll be the judge of it.
He said the last time Houstonians stopped going to games, they moved the team. They're scared of that happening again. So they won't.
Valid point.
I think it's a good
I'll
point.
I'll allow it.
Oh, you'll allow
I'll
it.
I'll allow it.
That's big.
That was a good point.
That's big time.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right, so there's that. And look, we'll see. I think the NFL is going to be pushed to make something happen and make a change because of the fact that the discussion was there before anything that happened last night or otherwise was brought to the table, and that is that for whether they extended the regular season or not, that everybody agreed there was too many preseason games, and whether you get into the season ticket holders and the fact that they have to pay for these tickets anyway or not, the bottom line is they're not getting top-notch NFL games and talent because we're seeing it less and less. It used to be, like we said, game three, it was supposed to be the dress rehearsal.
And you got three
and three and a half
quarters.
Yeah. Three and a half quarters of all the starters. Now you're saying you might get three series in a lot of cases. And some teams, like if you're the Raiders and the Packers, and because of the field and the venue, they held back most of their starters on both sides for the entire game. I mean, and you can't make that game up. It's in Canada. So I think that the NFL is going to be forced to have to address it and hope and maybe even do something about it because of the fact that it's just bad.
Don't bet on and assume. It's the NFL. They're stubborn and idiots. So
I don't disagree with any of that. Yeah. And their track record says that past precedents and or incidents don't mean anything to them. They just do it on a case-by-case basis. And if the case is they're still making money, then there's no case to change it.
So be it.
So we'll see what happens there. Why don't we throw – I will. I'll just – before we get to the end of hour number two, I'll throw this at you because we had talked about this anyway. But this Astros story I brought up, it's interesting now because you and I talked about a while back. It kind of was sent out there kind of under the radar that Ramin Gudouin, the pitcher that had been up and started a few games for the Astros, he was suspended by the organization for the rest of the year. And all they would say is he broke some team rules.
Okay.
Now – there is a blogger site, Astros County, your neighborhood Astros blog and grill. And I saw Cody Stutes actually tell people to check this specific article out. But they kind of highlighted the fact that Gudouin had been suspended for the rest of the season. There was also rumors that, hey, at the end of the minor league season, right around September call-ups, he still may get called up to the big league club regardless of what happened in the minor leagues. But now there's a little bit of the backstory according to this blogger who said that, you know, Gudouin had his struggles with the Astros from time to time, and after being up for a stint, he came back down, and one of the issues was control. So the situation as it was recounted to the Astros County was that Dean Dietz, another pitcher on the AAA team, is a bit of a character, and he talks a lot of smack. So he was giving Gudouin the business about not being able to throw a strike. Gudouin responded by throwing a shoe at Dietz, and he missed badly, apparently, to which Dietz responded, "See?" And they said, you know, that's legitimately funny, but what happened next is not.
That's great.
Gudouin picked up a bat, swung it, and hit Dietz in the head.
Oh.
Gudouin apparently didn't get a great swing on it, the article says, but it definitely dazed Dietz. So Gudouin was removed from the clubhouse at that point, but he came back later, this time with a knife. He didn't do anything with it, but he stood at his locker and he glared at Dietz. No one called the police, but the Astros suspended Gudouin. Now, by the standard of the law, that's assault. But you will, if you go back and look in the article states, if you go back and look on Round Rock's website, Dean Dietz didn't pitch between July 26th and August 5th.
Oof. First of all, yeah, they're going to call up Gudouin because they're going to need his bat in the lineup. Obviously.
Oh, wow. Just right.
Obviously, you want that guy pinch hitting.
Especially if you got any interleague games left. You were talking about Greinke and worried about him being able to hit and pitch.
He obviously swings a mean bat, so you want that in the lineup. You're not bringing him up for his arm because he can't even hit somebody with a shoe. That's pretty crazy, pretty wild. What's crazy is I don't even know that it gets wild until he shows up with a knife.
Tell me. Another player with a bat. That's where it got well on the crazy side.
If we had sporting equipment here, uh-huh, I could see one of us hitting the other one with a bat. It's to the point where if I walked in and you were sharpening your knife, where I would be like, now we've crossed the line into crazy town.
I think 6 months ago, one of us could have put the other one in the hospital.
With a bat?
Yeah, if not worse. I don't know that we're there now, but I think that that's it. But that's what I'm saying. In the locker room, you hit another player with a bat. That's where you cross the line. But here's the other thing. As an organization, what are you saying if – because obviously enough guys in the organization know what happened. That you said, okay, we're suspending you for the rest of the year.
Well,
but oh, by the way, in September when we need you, we're going to bring you to the big club.
We talked about his suspension, and I mentioned the fact that, look, that's the minor leagues. He's suspended from the minor leagues. When that season's over with, there's still major league.
He's not suspended by the governing body of minor league baseball.
I know, the Astros, that's their way around it. That's what I said when we talked. I think it was last week that we talked about this, not knowing the details around it. But I said, look, yeah, he's definitely suspended for the rest of the minor league season on the minor league teams, but that doesn't exclude him from playing with the major league ball club.
But my point is, what message are you sending to the rest of the players within your system when you call him up to the big league club when he does something this drastic?
Do you think that anyone at the major league level cares about that?
I do.
You do?
I do. I think, look, you talk about the sacred ground that is the clubhouse, and you talk about how Verlander and McCullers and those guys were concerned when Osuna was brought in. But at the same time, and I know you say he's not going to do that,
but
a message has to be sent so that you make sure that it doesn't become a complete zoo in the freaking locker room to where you go, and in the organization, where it's just completely guys going nuts whenever they want, losing their temper.
I'll tell you what, no one cares, nor are they worried about him doing that at the major league level with a bunch of pros in the locker room. What they need to be worried about is the rest of that team trying to make him go crazy by messing with him about that. Now, that I could see becoming an issue where they're like, oh, there's the crazy guy that hits his teammates with a bat and sharpens a knife in his locker room, and he can't even hit somebody with a shoe. I could see the ribbing and the joking be taken to the entire next level and them trying to push him into doing something crazy like that up here.
I think there'll be other players that would have issue with a guy that completely goes crazy at another player, and the organization basically says it's okay because at the end of the year they bring him back up.
I mean, look, they faded Osuna. At this point, they're probably feeling pretty confident about the chemistry and camaraderie in that clubhouse. You're bringing up a crazy man. I don't think that's going to bother them too much.
They did their due diligence on Osuna.
Yeah.
So,
well,
all right.
You want a guy up here that'll cut a bitch.
And on that note, 2 hours in the books, 1 hour still to go. So if there's things you want to get off your mind before the end of the show, 713-780-3776. It's karma. As HRP Lister Line is available, and so we are available on Twitter. We'll be back with the final 60 minutes right here on ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5.